Free thinking, protecting freedom of thought amidst the new battle for the mind. Scientific advances and the new technologies are letting others manipulate our minds more easily than before. It is the subject of a new book by Simon McCarthy Jones called Free Thinking. Delighted to say that Martin joins us live on the line now. Martin, good morning to you.
Morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. It's a thought-provoking book, isn't it, basically, or a thought-provoking subject?
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, I don't think that we've really thought enough about freedom of thought. We talk about freedom of speech all the time. You can't miss freedom of speech at the moment. But freedom of thought, which is related but distinct, we're really not talking about.
What are we, when we're saying freedom of thought, are we thinking of the mind as a blank page then, or do we come with preconceived thoughts and find them being manipulated by the blizzard of information, disinformation, alternative facts and fake news that we get shot at us via various medias every second of every day?
We don't come into the world a blank slate. Obviously, we're predisposed by our genes and our culture to think certain things in certain ways, but really, thought is really about power. So essentially, there's two ways to rule a country. You can rule through force of arms, or you can rule by kind of controlling the minds of the populace. And throughout history, rulers have sought to try and control the minds of their populace so they can rule securely.
When we talk about the UN looking at, I mean, we've heard of freedom of speech, freedom of action, etc. Freedom of thought. I mean, thought police. If we say the word thought police, then a lot of people will sort of wake up and start waving Orwell banners at me, with their copies of 1984. But presumably, freedom of thought is that are we linking freedom of thought to freedom of expression, to freedom of speech, or are you looking at perhaps the more insidious ways that our thought patterns can be interrupted and influenced?
I'd say both. So at the level of the UN, the way that the UN are thinking about freedom of thought comes really kind of in four ways. The first is us not being forced to reveal what we're thinking, so our right to mental privacy, to the privacy of our inner world. Secondly, would be the idea that we can't be punished for our thoughts, so we can't be punished for mere thinking. The third would be that we shouldn't be exposed to what they call impermissible alterations to our thoughts. And of course, there the devil is in the detail, what counts as impermissible alterations, and that's still being debated. And finally, then, is the idea that the state, the government, should provide an environment for us where we are free to think. So that's kind of what the law sees as thought inside our heads and how it should be protected. But for me, thought also exists outside our heads.
And so what is the premise of the book then? So how can we guarantee that people are free to think, which seems like a really weird thing to say, but it's perhaps vital in this book.
I think we need to start a public debate about what we want the right to freedom of thought to mean. Because particularly in an era of the so-called cancel culture or call-out culture, I think people are becoming increasingly scared to think in public. So again, I'd see thinking in public or thinking outside the head as happening in two ways. Firstly, the conversations we have with each other, although it's speech, it's also thought in action. And there's a pile of psychological research showing that in many situations, we think better when we're talking with other people. So we externalize thought. Thought happens outside our head in the form of public conversations. And that just seems crucial to me, to democracy and all elements of society. And the second is due to the way that technology has developed, we think with technology these days. So again, you might want to say that certain types of your Google searches, that is your thinking in action. And at the moment, a court can kind of wade into your computer and see what your Google searches are and use that against you in court. But for at least certain types of Google searches where you're actively trying to find answers, you're trying to gather information and think, I think that should be protected by your right to freedom of thought too. Because when the whole Snowden thing kicked off a few years back, again, you saw a real drop in search terms on Google about things which could be deemed controversial. So just the idea that the NSA were watching people's thoughts, thinking online, chilled their thought.
And of course, if you're looking at people's search histories, I mean, the way to be informed so that you can make subjective argument is to look at those sort of, which you would find distasteful. I mean, I always say, and listeners will be bored of me saying this, but I'm an armchair historian, and there are several distasteful things that I research because I want to be able to say this happened in history. If I go, for example, into Holocaust thing and I'm looking at reports coming out of, you know, atrocities from here, there and everywhere, I use that information for my thoughts to put forward an argument on the whys and wherefores. But if you were to go into my search history, and good luck with that, but if you were to go into my search history, you would find that and you could construe a completely different narrative that could be, we're saying this guy's right wing, this guy has got an unhealthy interest in this subject.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously there are certain online activities which are quite rightly illegal. So it's trying to discern what we think is thinking, what kind of criteria we want to see to say that somebody's activity is truth seeking, it's to politically inform them, for them to allow them to make kind of informed votes in democracies. So again, it's this real debate about, okay, what actually does constitute thought? What are we happy with as a society and what are we not happy with?
And what about the influences of external factors then on those on that thought? Because again, as I said at the beginning of this interview, we live in a world of fake news, of alternative facts, in my previous interview, I said, you know, we are so polarized at the moment; it's either black or white, and it's not those shades of grey from in between.
Yeah, I think so. On that, I guess there's a big debate to be had about what we see as permissible ways to persuade people. And what we see as being kind of more manipulation than persuasion. So again, when we're in discourse with somebody, to what extent are we appealing to their reason, or to what extent are we trying to kind of trick them or play on all the cognitive biases that we have in our mind to try and force people into a decision which, if they were thinking clearly and rationally, they might not endorse? Similarly, are we trying to rush people into decisions? Because again, thinking takes time to think. You need to be able to reflect. If you're being pressured or rushed into a choice, you're not able to think freely about it. So again, there's much discussion about providing so-called autonomy supportive contexts, which are trying to encourage internet service providers and large platforms to give us the space to think and the ability to think, rather than to try and push us into thoughts which are maybe in their benefit, but not in ours.
Here's the thing. Have we actually changed the way in which we come to decisions and we think? Because we're all talking about the internet here. And as we know, the internet is like an intellectual Casbah, you know, it's like a trading floor, people shouting around for the best price and he who shouts loudest gets listened to. But, you know, I'm from a generation where if you wanted to find something, every house had an encyclopedia, Britannica or whatever, and these stacks of things. And you would go off and you would research it that way. And then it gave you time for that vital period of reflection so you can make up your own mind. And perhaps we should be looking at, in terms of the way that we come to decisions or the way that our thought processes go, we are not, perhaps, you know, our brains aren't hotwired to be that immediate buy-sell network. Our brains should be are surely designed for that period of reflection. I think that's a very important word, Simon.
Yeah, I think you're saying that. I think largely our brains work to try and make us win arguments. So more generally, the brain wants us to be proved correct and to win an argument rather than necessarily reach the truth. So again, there are certain conditions where we're more likely to reach the truth. If a number of us come together with a diverse range of viewpoints, we're given the time and space to debate and to try and engage in truth-seeking rather than simple point scoring and social one-upsmanship. And in those conditions, I think that thought is more conducive to reaching truth and good self-government.
So what was the genesis of this book? What was the spark that led you to put this down in Free Thinking?
Yes, two things really. The first one was I wrote an article on schizophrenia a number of years ago, which went kind of viral. When I say viral, it went viral for an academic, kind of meaning that more than two family members read it. Anyway, so but I found myself constantly on Facebook. I was still on Facebook at that time. And at all times of night and day, I was thinking, check Facebook. Has it been liked? Has it been commented upon? And it just completely took over my mind. And again, I'm a psychologist. I kind of know what tricks are involved. And I still found myself being completely taken over by it. So that was kind of my entrance into this. And then secondly, it comes to the question of, again, I found that the right to freedom of thought really hadn't been developed since it had been introduced in 1948. The amount of work that had been done was minimal. And therefore, what this right means is really kind of up for grabs. And it's in a way, it's quite disconcerting knowing that a fundamental human right, which everybody lauds, hasn't been defined. Because again, once you reach a consensus on what we want this right to mean, that kind of stands over our society and has immense power and authority. So it's not like we're voting on what we want this right to mean. It's quite likely that experts are going to reach a consensus kind of outside the democratic process and are going to create a right, which is then imposed upon the rest of us, whether we voted for that right or not. So I think it's really important to have a public debate to work out what we're comfortable with and then to let the right kind of be informed by that rather than being decided far away somewhere.
Yeah, the problem is, and we've heard this over the past 12 hours, or you know, never mind 24 hours, is it's the will of the people, and we give people given mandates, and you're taking away that idea of free thought because we must push this piece of legislation through or that piece of legislation through, and you know, damn the torpedoes, without having debate or thought. It seems to be almost, forget engaging the brain. Everything tends to be knee-jerk reaction, and it's rather than being proactive, our thought processes now tend to be reactive or contrary to an ideal rather than forming a new one.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I also think again the stakes here are large because whereas free speech is a qualified right, so governments can regulate our speech for certain reasons, defamation, national security, etc. With freedom of thought, that is defined as an absolute right, which means nobody can interfere with that in any way. So if you can't interfere with anyone's thought, that causes a problem or a tension between thought and speech in the sense that if we want to say that certain forms of speech are manipulating people's thoughts and you can't manipulate people's thoughts, then that speech will then get banned. So you might think that freedom of thought is an absolute good as well, but there's this tension between thought and speech. And again, once we start saying, you know, you're manipulating me with your speech, you shouldn't be allowed to say that, we're getting into some kind of grey areas where, again, speech is being regulated for the greater good of thought, which we might be uncomfortable with.
So what recommendations do you have? And there's been an awful lot of talk of AI and down the line implants and stuff to make us even, you know, to expand our brain power. I mean, I'm not sure if you touched on that in the book, but, you know, where do you think we're going to go from here, Simon? Are we at a tipping point here?
Yeah, so again, much of the talk about AI focuses on whether AI has kind of a right to freedom of speech. So should AI be able to say what it wants? Does AI have rights in some sense? And you wouldn't say that AI in itself has rights. You say that AI has rights because we have rights. So, for example, we have the right to freedom of thought. Therefore, there's an argument to regulate AI to not let it manipulate our thoughts, because AI is going to learn what buttons to press in us to kind of push and pull us where we are. AI will be able to manipulate us and lead us around like marionettes. Again, we don't want that. So again, when we come to regulating AI, we're going to want to be guided by the idea of freedom of thought and that AI cannot be allowed to manipulate us at that level.
What do you hope that people will take from your book, Free Thinking?
I think what people would hopefully take would be the importance of the right to democracy, to everyone's autonomy, and perhaps more so the fact that if we don't all get involved and say what we want this right to be, other people will make that choice for you. So I'd say if you want to get involved now. Write, think, speak about this, and work out what you think our right to freedom of thought should be. Don't let others decide it for you.
The book is called Free Thinking, Protecting Freedom of Thought Amidst a New Battle for the Mind. It's by Simon McCarthy-Jones, who we're talking to today. Simon, you mentioned that you were on Facebook at some point, but are you on the social medias? Where can people find you online?
You can't find me anywhere, really. Not on Facebook, not on Instagram. So again, the book's out there, and again, any questions, you can find my email address out there too. And again, I'd be delighted to answer any questions folks had.
The book will be available as well as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore. This book is, as you would expect from the title, thought-provoking. It is called Free Thinking. It is by Simon McCarthy-Jones. Simon, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Charles.